Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's uncharted territory for me. The one time I did get traded in mid-season, you know, the Cowboys, they had a bye week that same week, so I kind of had a lot of time to prepare, to know the system and things of that nature. So this is definitely new for me. At the end of the day, it's just football, you know. I think I'm a pretty cerebral guy, at least cerebral enough to learn the playbook as fast as I can so I can go out there and get lined up and just run routes, catch the ball, get open, you know, compete in the run game.
There is Buffalo Bills' newest wide receiver, Amari Cooper. Drove in from Cleveland yesterday, was at Bills practice, or at least he was in the building. I don't know if he had necessarily practiced, but then spoke with the media, calling himself a cerebral wide receiver. Josh, I love that he did bring up the point, though, that when he was traded the last time, because that was a very successful trade, even in the moment, of just how good he was with the Cowboys. They did have a bye week in between, and, and it did help.
And I do wonder, though, like how quickly... And this goes for not just him, but for any player. Like, how quickly does it actually happen to integrate into a system
in all professional sports? It depends on the system, too. I mean, Adams going with, you know, Nathaniel Hackett again, Aaron Rodgers again. Like, they've already said he's starting on Sunday.
Right. Where well, the and Bills, we talked about it a little bit yesterday. I mean, he's going with not only his old offensive coordinator, but also the quarterback he played and was most successful with. So, for that one, it really makes sense that he can go in there right away and just kind of succeed. Or not succeed, but just perform and play right away. But... I mean, in my opinion, I don't know if this is the case because, you know, sports are weird, but you'd think that if you just get in there and just get going, it'd be easier. But then again, certain systems...
Professional sports, it may not be true.
Certain systems might be more complicated than others. Yeah. So, and we don't know that with Brady's system compared to, well, it is Ken Dorsey.
Yeah. Going to get more, though, on Amari Cooper here as we go to the Western Hotline as Spencer German of 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland joins the show. Spencer, man, good morning. How are we doing today?
Pretty good, guys. How about you? How's everybody enjoying their new wide receiver out there?
Well, it does help, Spencer, that they won the night before and moved to 4-2. Because I'm not gonna lie, like I think the trade would have worked and people would have been excited, but 3-3, that's a little bit of a bitter taste in the mouth.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine for you guys too. Like, it had to feel pretty good because not only did you just beat the Jets, but they then go make the move for Davante Adams, and then one day later, the Bills kind of respond again. So it's kind of like, oh, you thought you were going to get the better of us, but instead, you know, we went and made a move too. So, I feel like it all kind of – it's been a good week for the Buffalo Bills, that's for sure.
It's been a lot of fun. For Cleveland, though, I mean, what are they losing with Cooper? I know he's led most of their statistical categories as a wide receiver, but a big thing that's been being brought up this week has been the drops. I think it's 8 or 9. He leads the league. Has that been because it's been kind of up and down? Like, has it been Cooper himself, Deshaun Watson at quarterback? Has it been a mix of stuff? What have you seen?
Yeah, I think it is kind of a mix of things. I think first and foremost, to answer your question directly, what they're losing, I do think that the Browns are losing a fringe or borderline, you know, top 10 wide receiver in the NFL. Like when he's playing at his best, when he's healthy, when he's catching the football, he is that guy. In terms of like how things transpired this year, I think you can go back to this offseason. He wanted an extension. He's looking around, seeing some guys getting paid. And I think he understood where he was at. Like he's a wide receiver entering his age 30 season this year. And, you know, I don't think he necessarily thought he was going to get like Justin Jefferson money, but I think he still wanted to get an extension, have some security, feel like, you know, he was valued, and the Browns kind of balked at that. And the only thing they did was restructure the 1 year left of his deal. And, you know, got him in the door for training camp, but then he's floated in trade rumors with Brandon Ayuk. And I think that kind of rubbed in the wrong way. So then I think he kind of gets to the season, and I want to be clear, because I don't think it's like he became like a locker room cancer or anything like that. That is not Amari's style. He even said when he sort of held out during veteran minicamp as kind of like the one statement he made that he doesn't like doing that, and that's not really what he wants to do. So I don't think it's that at all. I think it was more so just like him feeling like he maybe wasn't valued here and kind of understanding the writing was on the wall. So maybe he wasn't as bought in with Cleveland as he was in previous years because of just the circumstances that were around him. But I do think like a fresh start is a good thing for him. Everywhere else he's gone where he's gotten a fresh start, he's played really, really well. I mean, here in Cleveland, he's the only receiver in franchise history to put up back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons. Like that says a lot about the Browns organization, but it also says a lot about Amari Cooper and how good of a player that he is. So, I just think like it was kind of the best situation for the team to send him somewhere where he could play with, you know, more of kind of a clear headspace. And I think that you guys are getting one of the best receivers in football when he's kind of focused on that.
So, Spencer, I was looking at, you know, the last few years of him in Cleveland with all the different quarterbacks he's caught passes from. I mean, Jacoby Brissett, Deshaun Watson, Joe Flacco, PJ Walker, Dorian Thompson-Robinson, and even Jeff Driskel's in there. I don't know if he got passes from all those guys, but they were all in as quarterbacks at one point. And, you know, then you look at this season, because in the past 2 years, he's been a plus 1,000-yard receiver. And then you look at this year with the drops and the questions on offense for the Browns as a whole. And is this just the Deshaun Watson effect, or what was, you know, causing that kind of stagnation there? Is it a offense as a whole thing, or what is that?
I think it's a little bit of what I alluded to with the last question, where it was, you know, I think some of it was like he just maybe wasn't in the right headspace, and he even mentioned a couple weeks back like he felt like he, I guess this was like after week two, he felt like he hadn't necessarily been practicing like he normally does to prepare for games, and how he was going to change that about the way he approached practice. So I thought that was kind of an interesting thing that he gave us earlier this season. But I think that was part of it. And I do think the offense played a role in this as well. I mean, I don't think it's not insignificant that you can go back, and I kind of laughed about this on Tuesday when the trade went down. There was a video of Amari Cooper last year when Joe Flacco was here. And, I mean, that was this whirlwind that everyone was just kind of wrapped up in here in Cleveland. Fans were loving every second of the Joe Flacco experience and the run that the team was going on to the playoffs and all that. And Flacco won that Nickelodeon MVP award thing or whatever it was, like the MVP or whatever they call it. And there's a video, you can find it, that the team posted where he's on camera and he's dumping slime over Joe Flacco's head. And he's like laughing, having a good time, loving. Like, there's something to be said for the fact that, like, in the offense they were running, which is more Kevin Stefanski's West Coast style offense, he was thriving. Whether it was Flacco, whether it was some of these other quarterbacks that were, you know, coming in and always counted on Cooper as kind of like their go-to guy in a pinch, he was playing some of his best football of his career, and he was playing really well with those guys. So I do think there's something to be said for the fact that, like, yeah, I don't know that him and Deshaun were ever really on the same page. There were some moments last year. There were some really good games. There were some plays I remember, like a deep pass against the Titans game a couple early in the season where he, like, dropped a really nice ball into Amari. So, like, there's moments, but it just never seemed like it clicked between them, even though they would probably both tell you that they did get pretty close from, like, a personal level. I just don't know that the system and what they were trying to do, like, worked with those two.
I remember when Flacco went in last year, all of a sudden David Njoku became like the best fantasy tight end for like a 4 or 5 week period. I mean, like, it felt like really that Cleveland had discovered something with Flacco, and that, I mean, now we're going on it to like a 3 year run here with the Colts too. Josh Downs all of a sudden really, really good. But Spencer, you brought up something on the offense. Excuse me.
No, I was just going to say Njoku basically made the Pro Bowl because of the late season stretch with Flacco. Like, he was nowhere near making the Pro Bowl before that, and then when Flacco came in, that was the reason he made it. So I was just going to throw that in, but go ahead. Sorry.
On the offense, though, it's been something I've been looking at. I help produce our afternoon show, and we do power rankings and it reverse AFC power rankings, and I Cleveland comes up quite often very early, but it's something I've been like looking at too, of just their offensive numbers. And like I know we all like to poke fun at Deshaun Watson, but like, this feels like a very talented group of skill position players around him, and yet the only time they've scored above 20 points so far this year, Spencer, was the third preseason game, and even the first two they scored under 15. It just, I'm just again outside looking in, it feels like it's all on Watson. I feel like it can't, though. Like, they're not even scoring 20 points.
Yeah, I'll be fair to Deshaun Watson because it is the easy, and you know, we talk about this a lot in this town because, you know, people people are over the Deshaun Watson experience, obviously, for plenty of reasons. I mean, from the day he got here, people were already over the experience. But he's part of the problem. I think that's fair to say. But it isn't all on Deshaun at this point, like why the offense has been so bad. I think some of it comes down to just like the system that they're running isn't Kevin Stefanski's system. And so I don't know that he's like as comfortable with like everything that they're doing and calling the plays and figuring out like what's going to work and, you know, using the personnel that they have along those lines. Like the offensive line has really struggled. And this is an offensive line that, again, in Kevin Stefanski's system, which is a lot of gap run scheme and all these different things, like they generally have been one of the best offensive lines in football, and now they're running a lot more like outside zone and those types of things. And I think it's maybe we're seeing that this offensive line isn't equipped for that, or they just don't have the players for that, or maybe they just got old really quickly. But the offensive line struggled in pass protection. They're not picking up blitzes well. There's some miscommunications every single game on that front. And that's part of like what's been exposed about them. And then you throw in the fact, like you were talking about with Amari Cooper, like guys are dropping passes. And that wasn't just Amari either. He might lead the league, but like Jerry Judy's dropped some passes. David Njoku, when he's played, he's dropped a couple passes. So it's kind of been a widespread thing. The offense as a whole is pretty anemic. And I think a lot of people equate that to just Deshaun, and there's certainly reasons why he's not helping the cause, but it isn't all on him.
So one piece that personally I think is missing for this Browns team is Nick Chubb. I mean, obviously that injury is really bad and, you know, you hope he can come back soon. But what's the buzz around him lately? It sounds like he might be kind of on his way back, but is there any, you know, hope that he's going to be back this week, or is it a little further down the road?
Yeah, so the expectation is he'll be back this week. That was reported leading into the Eagles game this past weekend that he was coming back. And then yesterday he dropped this really emotional, like charged letter to the fans at the Players Tribune, where he, you know, was just talking about how much he loves Cleveland and how the fan support is like really what got him through his rehab. And he did have a moment where he maybe thought he wasn't going to play ever again. So the expectation is that he'll be back out there this weekend. Big game after a 3-game road trip. You're coming back home. It's going to be something to energize the fan base for a 1-5 team. In some ways, it feels kind of wrong that he's getting trotted out there. It's kind of like this shield from the organization's problems right now. But on the other hand, it is something that I think the fan base needs. It's something to get excited about with Nick Chubb. I don't know that he just fixes everything. If they were running Kevin Stefanski's system, like, holy, I'd probably feel better about that maybe being the case, because when he's thrived in Kevin Stefanski's system. But because it's this new offense that's more built towards what Deshaun Watson does well, I don't know that I'm expecting Nick Chubb to get like 25 carries a game and, you know, go for 200 yards and 3 touchdowns and save this season from the I guess going down the toilet like it already kind of is.
On the Western Hotline, Spencer German of 92.3, the Fan over in Cleveland. Spencer, last thing for me here, you've brought him up a lot, Kevin Stefanski, the head coach, 2-time coach of the year. But it also kind of feels like his seat might be one of the hottest in the NFL, just again as an outside looking in. Is that sort of the sense you're getting, or is this more kind of like it's an ugly season, we're going to get through it, but he's still going to be the coach going forward?
Ooh, that's a very layered question or a loaded question rather, because it's funny, like you look around the league, generally when there's like a standoff, and I don't mean a standoff in the sense that like Kevin and Deshaun Watson like don't get along. I just mean like a standoff like inside an organization between a quarterback and a coach, and you have to pick one or the other. Normally the quarterback's going to win because teams just invest too much in that position. And we know what the Browns have invested at this point in Deshaun Watson. They traded the 3 first round picks. They've now, they obviously spent a lot of money on him, the $230 million guaranteed. And now they spent a lot of time on Deshaun Watson. So I do think like, the Haslams, this ownership group, like they want to do everything in their power to prove that this was the right move for them to make, that they made the right decision in bringing Deshaun here. And so that, I think, at least makes the question you're asking one that's timely and certainly worth asking, because generally when that's the case, like the coach is the person on the hot seat. What I think is interesting though is like they just signed him and Andrew Berry to contract extensions this summer. Now that doesn't necessarily mean anything. Like those don't count against the cap. You can move on from them, whatever. It's just money for the owner. But like I'd be hard pressed to feel that they would completely just like abandon Kevin Stefanski like that and put this all on him. I think there does need to be some soul searching though that goes on the rest of the season. Like if the rest of the season becomes about figuring out if Deshaun Watson is salvageable whatsoever, then by the end of the season, you need to know what you're going to do. Are you moving on from the head coach? Are you, you know, sticking with the quarterback? And if your plan is maybe draft a quarterback, like, well, what are you going to do? Because, and I think that in the end, like, cooler heads will prevail, and there'll be a little bit of soul searching, and they're just going to have to admit at some point, like, maybe we got this one wrong, and we got to bite the bullet, do what we can to work around this albatross of a contract that we have on our books. So I don't think Kevin Stefanski is in danger. I think he's going to be the coach next year, and I think he'll be back. But I definitely understand, like, outside looking in, why it certainly seems that way, because, again, whenever these situations come up, quarterback and coach, and you're choosing one or the other, it's usually the coach that ends up being the thing that you move on from, because these teams just get so invested in proving themselves right about these quarterbacks.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be one of the most fascinating kind of storylines to follow the rest of this year. Spencer, man, thanks so much for jumping on with us. Enjoy the rest of your week, and hope to talk in soon.
Absolutely, man. Anytime. Always happy to do it with you guys. Appreciate you.
That was Spencer German of 92.3 The Fan over in Cleveland on the Western Hotline. And I do mean it, honestly. I think Cleveland is going to be one of the most fascinating teams to watch the rest of the year. They're 1-5. They're going nowhere. I mean, but they were a team last year. I mean, Josh, we were joking about Flacco, but it was kind of this feeling going into the playoffs of, I don't want to play him.
Right, like, yeah, because he's on a roll. Like,
he's on a
get away from me.
You know, when we brought it up there, it wasn't just Amari Cooper.
Yeah.
David Njoku got to as Spencer brought up, he got to the Pro Bowl essentially off his late season run.
Mm-hmm.
They were a dangerous team that ultimately ran out of gas, you know, playing Houston.
Right,
and Houston
right.
kind of ran him out of the building. But now you're seeing this year, and as Spencer brought up too, that albatross of a contract with Deshaun Watson. It is interesting, though. I, for one, really did think they're going to put Kevin Stefanski out onto the flaming pyre and just be like, hey, he's the guy. He's the reason.
It's his fault.
And then they were going to go, you know, skip on over to Boston College and be like, hey, Bill O'Brien, the last time right. you were with Deshaun, it was awesome. How about you come to Cleveland? Lake Erie's wonderful this time of year, and we do this again.
Sure
and a part of me still thinks it's going to be the way they go.
Yeah.
But hearing there where it's like, maybe not. Maybe they are really just going to try anything to make this work. Because as he brought Andrew Berry and Stefanski, contract extensions this year, they've paid Deshaun Watson. I would say, though, if I were the Haslam's, number one, I'm not going for Watson, but that's neither here nor there. If I'm Haslam in this situation now, I'm picking the two-time coach of the year, the guy that's gotten less talented teams to the playoffs, over the quarterback who, look, I got a lot of bad PR from anyways, atrocious PR from, and he hasn't helped me even once. He has not once been able to get it to where people would forget about it because it's sports. And I'm not saying that's a right thing, but that is what happens. You were willingly going to pay most of that, all of it anyways. You were going to do it over an extended period of time. Bite the bullet, do it now. That's where I'm at least on that situation. But as you're seeing now, they're somewhat kind of tearing down a little bit. Well, maybe they trade more guys, but at least up to this point, they're trading their leading receiver. And over the last 2 years, been one of the best playmakers in the NFL.
I mean, I look at their depth chart at receiver now, though, and it's like you have Jerry Jeudy, Elijah Moore, Cedric Tillman, and Jamari Thrash.
I need you to say Elijah Moore's name, though, with a little more gusto. That's my guy. He's not really anymore. But.
No. Back up. You led me wrong last fantasy football season and the one before that because, Elijah Moore, he's going to be so good. He's going to be so great.
He's
you
my
were
guy.
A sleeper agent. Like you,
he's
you,
my guy.
You made me draft him both years, and then he ends up doing nothing for the Jets and for the Browns.
I blame Zach Wilson for most of that.
I blame Zach Jones for most of that.
It's also probably
Listen,
fair.
But, like, I that's why, you know, I was talking to Spencer about Nick Chubb there because it's like if he comes back, sure, he's going to provide some excitement, but.
But it might be about it.
What's he going to do? Like, he's just the guy that's coming back from injury for the third time in his career. And I really wish we could see, like, he you know, we had the what if conversation a few weeks ago.
Nick Chubb with no injuries.
Nick Chubb with no injuries and not in Cleveland.
Statistically.
Nick Chubb on literally any other team in the NFL. I would even put him on the Giants and think, yeah, he could be successful.
Cleveland, though, was working for him because their offensive line for almost all of his career was very good.
True.
No injuries. I mean, he was statistically one of the best running backs like in NFL history in terms of yards per carry and all that stuff.
And
yards
where
per
did
game.
That,
he was awesome.
Where did that get the Browns?
Well,
because
for
the
for
rest
time,
of it.
Well, no, that yeah. one year when they had they went Baker to, Mayfield and
yeah,
they go to
they
the playoffs.
Against the Chiefs, yeah.
It was Chubb in that defense.
So one
Baker
year,
was just hanging out.
One year. And this is not a slight on Chubb. This is a slight on the Browns ruining a generational talent.
At running back, which you can say about a lot of teams.
The Giants, like I just brought up.
Giants, Saquon Barkley, Detroit, Barry Sanders.
Oh, yeah.
For most of his career, Chicago and Walter Payton.
All right, you're just proving my point. I'm trying to yell at Cleveland here. I want them to get it together because, like,
Adrian Peterson in Minnesota.
Stop it.
Really, any team that, like, values a running back over everything else, no, that running back's career is like, oh, I mean, he was great. And then, like, I never saw him in January.
But I look at, like, you know, what's going on in the NFC North. And those four teams are all getting good at the same time. And it's so fun. It's so cool. The AFC North probably should also be in that same conversation aside from Pittsburgh. I mean, Baltimore is good. Mm. Cincinnati, Joe Burrow is letting us all down. The Browns
Joe Burrow
are, the
is
Browns,
not letting us down. Joe Burrow's awesome. That team is atrocious.
Okay, the first 2 weeks Joe Burrow was letting
That's
us down.
That's fair.
The Cleveland is Cleveland and Pittsburgh is Pittsburgh, but that division has so much deep-seated hate for each other that the rivalry games are great, but it doesn't matter because usually if you're against Baltimore, you're going to get blown out. If it's against Pittsburgh, you're just going to kick field goals all game. And Cincinnati, I mean, yeah, if Joe Burrow's on, Cincinnati's also going to blow you out. The only good game you get is Baltimore-Cincinnati, and most of the time Baltimore handles them pretty easily. So I'm sorry. I have a lot of beef with the AFC North just because of the fact that they just can't get it together. They would have such a good
Love that division.
Run of rivalries, but they can't seem to all get it together at the same time. It's usually one team out of the four is super good, and the rest are just in purgatory.
Sunday Night Football classics, AFC North rivalries. It's so good.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the phones here. We've got Jimmy on the line. Jimmy, how are we doing this morning?
I'm doing fantastic, boys. How are you guys?
Doing well.
Good.
I just want to talk about the Amari Cooper trade, and I agreed with you guys earlier. I really don't think we looked at Davante Adams at all. I mean, just like the deal we got, we basically got him for a bag of pucks, if you're talking about hockey terms.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And with the whole, I also want to talk about Bass. I mean, the fact that last year we saw the disaster in the playoffs, I don't understand why we didn't bring in a kicker to begin with on the practice squad in the beginning of the season. I mean, he's done this before. I just don't understand.
I think it was a feeling, though. Yeah. I think it was a feeling, though, Jimmy. Thanks for the call. I think it was the hope, because he had done it before, that it was going to come back. The confidence was going to come back. This team does trust their players, maybe to a detriment. I don't disagree with that. But they really do trust their players to find it. They did it with Gabe Davis a lot for two-ish years. They were hoping that one playoff game against Kansas City was a sign that he was going to be the dude at the number two wide receiver, and it just didn't ultimately happen. I think for me with the Davante Adams thing, though, too, is it really came down to the contract they were going to have to take on. I don't think Vegas was ever going to be willing to really take any of the contract. I think they wanted to be completely done with Davante Adams, like a bad ex. They wanted everything done and over with. They wanted that paperwork signed, and they wanted to say, Avita Zane, I'll see you never again. I think that's really what they wanted. And it's kind of what they got with the Jets. With the Bills, they were not going to get that. I am excited, though. And Sal brought it up when we were talking with him a little while ago. They have a lot of picks, and being on the Pat McAfee show specifically was very upfront about, like, hey, we've always been all in, which, take that at face value. I'm not sure about it, but he kind of openly said, like, you know, we've got time before the trade deadline and we might still get active. I know a lot of people have brought up the need for a safety. I don't disagree with that at all. I'd like to see more from Cole Bishop, and Taylor Rapp had a very good game on Monday night, but really, up to this point, the safety positions has begged you for help.
Buda Baker, let's go.
Oh, man,
bring it on.
They'd have to take on so much money again.
I don't think that's actually possible, but that would be so good.
That'd be so good. I mean, but we've gotten people like calling up, going, like, where's Mike Edwards? Like, they signed him.
Right.
And where is
right.
he?
I was really excited for Mike Edwards, honestly. Yep. I wonder what's going on there. I don't know if it's an injury
I think there's a good chance. And I know Sal brings this up a lot, too, about, like, we don't see practices. I think there's a very good chance he has been worse than what we've seen from the actual safety positions in practice. Mm-hmm. That they're kind of like, all right, like, this is going to be the group that we have to try out.
Maybe that the injury was worse than expected.
It could be worse, or just he's not fitting what they wanted at all.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying.
I've also brought up edge rusher. I think the team is missing Von Miller, which, man, if you would have said this a year ago, that would be surprising. I think they are missing him on the outside. They were able to get some pressure to Aaron Rodgers. It should have been more. They're going to get him back, I think, in, what, 2-3 weeks? So we'll see about that, but I would love to see them add somebody, not Hassan Reddick.
I was going to say, personally, I don't, but what do you feel about Hassan Reddick? I don't want Hassan Reddick, but I was just, I mean, he is
well,
kind
I,
of...
I actually, it would be tough because he's on the Jets. I don't see that happening.
Yeah.
I do wonder, though, now, because we haven't actually been able to talk about any of this, but, like, he's
was fired by his agency. He didn't get a new agency. Mm-hmm. They walked away from him. Yeah, they walked away from him, and now he's with
which is completely different than the other way around.
Yeah.
That's a massive question mark.
Yeah, it's notable.
Yeah.
You know, now he's with Drew Rosenhaus, which it feels like every NFL player is with Drew Rosenhaus, but whatever. I think there's a really good chance here that like he's just looking for like any team to give him like a 1 year deal, kind of a prove it contract, and then do this again next offseason, because I think he has really missed the mark on how teams value him and such, and it has really bit him to the point now. I mean, he's losing a lot of money.
I think Detroit should go after him.
Detroit probably should. I know Max Crosby was out there a lot for him. Max Crosby is going to be a lot. Obviously, they lose Aiden Hutchinson. That's where I actually think Detroit will go with Hassan Reddick, because Max Crosby, I just don't see him leaving the Raiders ever. No. I think he even put out a statement on Instagram saying, like, I bleed, you know, silver and black, not silver and blue. And I was like, yeah, it's a Raider, baby.
All right.
I mean, to be fair, I look at Max Crosby and I'm like, he'd fit right in on those, like, 70s, 80s, like, Raiders teams where you're like,
yeah, everyone, but he also
everyone
looks like
was kind of a bully and a little bit of a crazy person. Like, that's Max Crosby.
But he also looks like him and Dan Campbell would be best friends.
Don't disagree on
like
that.
Those two would be crazy together. You think Dan Campbell's crazy?
That's why I like him and Aiden Hutchinson. That injury hurt. I watch a lot of football, but not necessarily like, you know, in that sense of like I'm deep into like in the Detroit Lions lore. But him coming from Michigan, being that second overall pick, and being as good as he's been, and see that injury, and I'm like, oh come on, like and especially in the blowout against, I mean, Dallas was in nowhere land, and that's gonna hurt them. But Hassan Reddick would work. 803-0550, the number to call if you want to join the show. Talking a lot of Sabres there in the first hour, talking a lot of Bills here in the second hour. Love to hear your thoughts. Zach Jones, Josh Mint here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. You're listening to WGR.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We were still all in. If this didn't happen, if Cleveland was not ready to do it, we were going to continue to monitor and listen. We still got a few weeks for the deadline. If we feel there's something else that we need or can help us get over the top, we have been all in all along.
Buffalo Bills general manager Brandon Bean there on the Pat McAfee show. That was just about an hour or so before we actually spoke with the media. I do love when he does the Pat McAfee show. Bean, I think, is somebody that does want to be very honest with you when he's talking, but can't. Because of the nature of his job. And when he goes on McAfee, he jokes a little bit more. You even saw there, like, he's kind of like, you know, he's a little bit more laissez-faire in terms of the information he's going to give you. And you know, I think it's also GM speak, like, to let all the other GMs know, like, hey, you know, our phones are not turned off. They are charged. Like, we're ready to go.
Our phones, in fact, work.
But I think also reality, I wouldn't be surprised if the Bills were willing to wheel and deal a little bit more. Sal's brought it up, and I know he's tweeted it out. They have potentially 10 draft picks coming up in this next draft. They're going to have more cap space open up in this next window as well. So
that's the hardest part right now. That's probably, I mean, they talked about it. That's probably why this was labeled a transition year. It's how little cap space they have kind of limits what they can do in season.
Yep. And it's like, all right, we have the team now. This is what we're going to work with now. But ultimately, they go 4-2, had some clear weaknesses that they could figure out. I mean, the Amari Cooper thing sort of falls in their lap. Mm-hmm. Our last caller, too, brought up. I mean, they get him for, you know, a bag of pucks. I fully agree with that analogy.
Right.
Because you're paying him $800,000 and
less than that.
Yeah, a little bit less than that. And ultimately, it's a third-round pick in which you have 2 twos and potentially 3 fours in next year's draft. So you're sitting there going like, okay, we're fine. We're still going to take the exact same amount of players.
Oh, no,
if we want to.
It is $800,000. You were right. $800,000. I thought it was less than that, but still.
But so, like, ultimately, like, and they're sitting there going, cool. And he adds exactly what we need. And I don't think this should be ignored. Everything I've heard from Amari Cooper speaking yesterday and everything I've heard from his teammates, he potentially fits more in the locker room of what the Bills want than maybe Diggs did at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily know if he fits on field as well as Diggs did, although, you know, talking with Sal before the season even started, I kind of had the question of, does current Diggs fit what the Bills want to do? I think Amari Cooper fits closer to that. We'll find out. I think, though, a really big thing is he maybe fits the personality far more for the Bills.
Right,
now,
like the vibes of just like super,
the vibes.
Not necessarily chill, but like just, okay, this might sound weird and cliche, but togetherness.
Togetherness, like, maybe not nearly as intense as Diggs,
right.
Which
you
I don't
want to
say it's a bad, yeah, and I don't want to say it's a bad thing,
right?
But you can see that maybe drove some teammates insane.
Right, because you want intensity, and you see the intensity from a lot of guys, mm-hmm. including like Josh Allen.
And he was a captain, so like the team
right.
did respect him,
right.
obviously.
Yeah, and you know, like I said, like you see Allen get intense all the time. Look what he did to the celebration after getting that first down against the Jets at the end of the game. It's like, these guys are intense, but Diggs is that next level, which, mm-hmm. like you said, is not a bad thing, but it's, if most of your team is not like that, it can be kind of tough. And it is tough to, like, put those players into certain locker rooms, because if you have a full locker room of all of those guys and they just get mad at each other the whole time, you know, because if you're all, you know, jacked up and intense, it can lead to other problems. But
I think, too, that there's maybe an argument to be had that the Bills were wound up too tight.
Yeah, everyone's so...
That past just, postseason failures and stuff like that really did kind of just wear at the team, and this is why age two playing into it, but also was a good year for the transition of, okay, these guys...
calm down a little
bit. Yeah, these guys didn't get it done. We'll do this now.
It's another comparison mm-hmm. to the Maple Leafs.
Yeah.
Like, I remember we came up with that last year, and, you know, maybe even a couple years ago, but... You know, the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Bills can be very similar in terms of talent and success and everything in that sense of you know, just not being able to get it done in the postseason, but being great in the regular season.
Yeah.
Like that feeling is just, it's there for both teams. And, you know, we haven't really seen the Leafs take this step of like, okay, let's back off and like, you know, no expectations. Let's just go out there and play. The Bills are doing that this year. That's kind of what this year in transition was supposed mm-hmm. to be. And so far, it's worked out okay. And now they have a player that kind of fits that exact vibe of, yeah, there's no real expectations. Just go out there and do your thing.
Yep. I'm very, very excited to see what he can do. And I am keeping my expectations tempered, especially for this Sunday. I think mm-hmm. at best he's going to be in a limited role. That limited role, though, again, could be one of those things of like, hey, I know you don't know the playbook, but like you're going to run a slant here. You're going to run across.
Right.
You know, what have you.
Wouldn't it be great, though, if he just gets like two plays and scores a touchdown? Like,
he's got that ability.
Could you imagine he goes in there and just tears it up in
he
like
He has got
10
that
snaps.
Ability. He really does. Like I could see something though where it's just like, hey, you're gonna run a streak here and just like I'm gonna send it up.
One target, 65 yards, touchdown. Like could you imagine? Like I think the excitement's also there because you know that he's that field stretching type that they haven't had this year. Mm-hmm. And I think we're all realizing, you know, take your opinion on Diggs as you will, whether you liked him, whether you didn't like him, you're glad he's gone, you're sad he's gone. We all kind of miss those big plays that he used to be able to make.
I am so glad. And Allen has to hit these. Again, I'm going to make sure to reiterate this point so people don't think I'm being easy on him. He has got to hit some of these deep throws.
Yeah.
But I am glad it's not Mac Hollins it's expected now. Mac Hollins is not going to be the guy tracking these passes. Because, mm-hmm. man, and Jeremy and Joe brought up the stat today, too, of just how many targets he had compared to catches. And it is... upsetting.
What wasn't it, like 17 targets?
Yeah.
Something like that, and only 7 catches?
Yeah.
A catch a game is not great.
And he is having, like, his, in terms of success rate, his worst year of his career. And that's, again, you know, I'm texting my buddy now too. So he goes, all right, hear me out. What about Zay Jones or Darius Slayton? Like, and add another guy. And I told him just straight up, I'm like, honestly, dude, whatever means that, like, Mac Hollins can go to a more like Mac Hollins role.
Right. Cause if he had seven catches,
whatever that is,
if he had seven catches through seven games and only like 10 targets.
You're happy.
That's kind of what you're expecting him to be. Is this,
but right now he has, it's 19 targets to 7 catches.
19.
It's his worst catch percentage at 36.8 in terms of success. I want to see, can I find it here? Or I cannot. But I mean, the catch percentage, though, was 36.8. But this is something I was bringing up, though, over their two losses, where he had 12 targets and was, I think, leading the team at the time in targets and had three catches. I'm like, this can't be happening. This is why your offense is going into a shell. You've got a guy who, at best, is a wide receiver four, but you really like him. He gives kind of like the, he's got the size stuff. We've seen in the red zone. He's got two touchdowns. Like, that hasn't been really a problem. But in terms of being the field stretcher, in terms of being a guy that can lead your team in targets on a given day, it's not good by any stretch of the imagination. And then it kind of went down against New York. He only had two. One catch, it ultimately is a touchdown. This can put him more in that role of, I think his best day was against Arizona in the first week, where he had two targets, two catches, 25 yards, and a touchdown. That is maybe the perfect bit for Mac Hollins. He's not being targeted a ton, but when he is, he's able to catch it. They're not putting him in a role he's not used for or not used to or not even good at, and they can get more out of it. That, to me, is my favorite bit of the Amari Cooper thing. I think it allows everyone to go into roles they're more comfortable or more suited to. I've used the phrasing of just move everyone down a peg, and it's going to be what it is. Keon Coleman now doesn't have to run every single snap outside. He can be used as a slot because everybody that was covering the draft said, yeah, I mean, he might be able to develop into an outside wide receiver.
He's just a big slot.
But he's going to start his career out as a big slot. And to be fair, looking back, you know, alarm bell should have been going off. And I think it was for some people, me not so much. But alarm bell should have been going off that when Brandon Bean spoke, like, immediately after the draft, he said, oh, he's going to be an X. Like, I mean, that was a little, like, looking back now, it's a little concerning. He's a guy that is coming around, but much more slowly than I think they were hoping for.
Well, and I wonder too, like, if this is the case where he gets pushed inside now and he's just more of a slot player, I think that might be better for, mm-hmm. if in the future, if they want to use him as an X, this right here could be, hey, get your feet under you, go catch the ball, get some receptions, just get used to the NFL game,
mm-hmm.
and then we'll try you outside next year, or we'll sprinkle you in towards the end of the season or something like that. Like, because not only is he just have time and the expectations are off, you can just go do what you're used to doing. Right? Like, mm-hmm. that's what he used to do in college, is what he can do now in the NFL, potentially.
Yeah.
And he can also learn from a guy like Amari Cooper. He's 30 years old. He's been in the league for 10 years.
And one of the best route runners in the sport.
Right.
His separation stats, I saw Jeremy tweet this out or retweet it, is the best of his career up to this point.
Yeah, I think that's the other thing, too, that, like, if you can start, because you're a huge advocate for this. I am, too, but you're very vocal on it because you're a draft nerd. If they could start drafting younger players and then utilize that cap to keep a guy like Amari Cooper around and have him not only be a part of the team, but also just be a mentor to these young players coming in.
And never let the cupboard get dry or empty
or
anything.
Right, exactly. But a guy like Amari Cooper who can have the same sort of style as Diggs, mm-hmm. but be a lot less intense and a lot more, you know, open to things, if that's the sense, in terms of, doesn't come off as intimidating, because that intense style can come off as intimidating if you're a rookie coming into the NFL, and
it can wear on you too. I mean,
right,
it could just,
exactly. So I'm just looking at it in the long term of if you get a guy like Cooper, or you keep Cooper around and have him here with younger players, even Shakir can benefit.
Mm-hmm.
He's not necessarily a young player, but he's only been here 2 years really, and
yeah,
you know, I look at the off field benefits too on top of what he can do on the field with Allen, you know, being able to stretch the field a little bit, mm-hmm. or just take the attention away from guys.
Let's go back to the phones here. We've got Adam on the line. Adam, how are we doing today?
Bad guys. How are we doing today? Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks for calling in.
Just wanted to pick your brain about what your projections are for what we're looking at for Cooper this weekend. I would expect him to be on the field quite a bit, as well as getting the ball thrown his way a lot. It seemed like our head coach, when asked about, you know, what to expect about him, was kind of downplaying it. And talking, you know, wanting to talk more about the guys that are already here. And that concerns me, because is this going to be one of these things where we kind of like, ease him into the playbook and, you know, wait for this to evolve. Like, let's get it going now. This is football. At the end of the day, like, the route tree doesn't change regardless of what team you go to. Sure, the playbook is different, but just looking for your feedback in terms of what you guys think he's going to produce this weekend. Thanks.
Yeah. Adam, thanks for the call, man. I will say, though, on that point, because I think it has been brought up a lot of McDermott being very quick to praise really anyone on the team. And that's why it was noticeable that him and Bean didn't do that for Bass. I think that was a big part. Sal brought it up as well of Bean was being very honest in his assessment of Bass. I think that's just their style. They want to make sure that, like, they never really step in it. McDermott has been somebody that has done so before, and so I think he is being very careful to not do so again. I will say, though, Amari Cooper was also pretty quick to kind of not, you know, say I'm being shelved this week or anything like that, but he made sure to bring up that, like, well, you know, last time this go around I was trading in season, there was a bye week, and then I was able to play.
Bills' bye week is until week 12.
Yeah, you get 5 days.
Yeah.
Figure it out.
Hey, good luck.
Now, I think you're absolutely right to bring up that a route tree is a route tree, and you can kind of figure it out. I think that's how he's going to kind of be used, though, is like in the huddle, he's going to call a play and then look at Amari and go, okay, this is what you're doing.
Yeah, right. Because everyone else kind of knows what they're doing, or they should anyway. But I look at, I brought it up earlier. He is coming from Ken Dorsey as the offensive coordinator. And I know Dorsey and Brady are different people, but
potentially the verbiage is the same.
The offense might be kind of similar or have similar notes. So you never know there with in terms of how coordinators operate. I mean, looking at this so far under Brady, it's a much different offense than Ken Dorsey was. I mean, Dorsey, it looked like, hey, just everyone run down the field and Allen's going to throw it to somebody. Like, that's how it always felt. And that's why he's not the coordinator here anymore. And that's also why he doesn't call plays in Cleveland, I think. But I look at the two coordinators that were together here, and I wonder how much similarities there are.
Adam Henry, the wide receiver coach, also a former coach for Cooper as well. That's the big connection.
I didn't know that.
So that one should be good. I will say, though, in terms of just the production, I would love if he had this stat line. 8 targets, 5 catches, 58 yards, and a touchdown. That was his first game for Dallas after being traded from then the Oakland Raiders. If he gave me that in his first game with the Bills after 5 days,
yeah,
I'd be ecstatic.
If he gave me that next week...
Yeah, I'd be happy with that.
Insane.
That's a little over 10 yards per catch.
Mm-hmm.
Got me a touchdown, and the success rate was up.
Yeah,
don't drop a pass on your first game. I'd be happy. I'm not expecting a ton against Tennessee. Seattle is much more the game which is the following game is much more the one that I'm looking at. Of like, okay, this is when I want to see Amari Cooper 100% full go. He's now part of this, and we're moving forward. Also, real quick, want to bring this up on McDermott and Bean. They were both very excited to say that, like, this got done when it did, compared to the Douglas trade, which was, like, at the deadline. And everyone, including Douglas, brought up how, like, really the rest of the season he was kind of just moving on instincts and vets telling him where to go. This will allow Cooper to actually be integrated into the offense, and then it's a go. And so, I, for me at least, it's alleviating some of my fears that I know Adam had there, where is McDermott just going to slow play this to the point where it's, why did we even do this? 803-0550, the number to call. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here until 12 o'clock. You'll listen to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. We have also, of course, been getting connected to our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. We have not brought up yet tonight. I mean, we do have a Sabres game tonight. It's in Columbus, 6 p.m. pregame, 7 p.m. puck drop. Again, part of their back-to-back road series. They're also on the road on Saturday in Chicago. That's going to be 8 p.m. puck drop. But we also have Thursday night football.
8 p.m.
Yeah. Ugh. No, thank goodness. Thank goodness. Oh, good. Can't start at 7. I won't watch it. Texas, Georgia.
Oh, that's right.
I'm going to have that little buffer where it's like, okay, the first quarter in it. I'm going to jump over here. Okay, I'm going to go back.
Man.
I'm like here. I'm ready to go.
Thank God that game's on a Saturday rather than like on just a normal weekday.
It's going to be big. It's going to be college game day is going to be there.
Ooh.
I'm excited. I'm nervous, but I'm excited.
You think they're going to pick Texas or Georgia?
I don't know. Honestly, Georgia has built up such good credibility so quickly in college, and rightfully so, that I could see it happening. The problem is I keep seeing the point spread for Texas 2 weeks in a row now go up as the week goes on.
Yeah.
And man, it is freaking me out. Like it I think it started as they were a 3-point favorite to open the week, and now as of today, I think they're a 5-point favorite, and I do think that is going to go up. Is freaking me out. They didn't even play that well against Oklahoma. Very clearly some rust for Quinn Ewers, and they killed them. I mean, just blew them out. It was never really a game after like three series. I'm very, very excited for the game. It's 1 versus 5. I was just thrilled Texas was able to still like be at number one after Oregon beat Ohio State. I fully thought Oregon's going 1, Texas 2, and to see Texas be 1, I was like, let's go, baby. But yeah, I got that started at 7:30. Hockey game starting at 8, so I'll be able to successfully jump between the two of them. I will tell you though, no offense to the Sabres, I will bail if it's a close game for Texas Georgia.
Even if the Sabres are winning?
Yeah. I'm feeling national championship, Josh, which is uncharted territory for me.
No, that's right. That's right. That's fair.
That's going to do it for me and Josh today. Coming up next, after a quick timeout, Sabres Live. You're listening to WGR.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, 3-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.